You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Pacers traveled to the desert on Wednesday night so T.J. Warren could get his revenge against his former team, the Phoenix Suns. And the North Carolina State product just did that. He scored 25 points on 11 of 18 shooting, including 3 of 4 from 3 to lead the Pacers. Falling behind him was Domantas Sabonis with 24 points and 13 rebounds as the center made another strong case for why he should be on the All-Star team. And lead the way on the bench, Doug McDermott had 12 points and Justin Holiday had 11. For the Suns, the leading scorer was Kelly Oubre with 17 points on 5 of 16 shooting. Not a great night for the former Washington Wizard player. And to follow him was Devin Booker with 16 points and 2 rebounds and 3 assists. For the Pacers, other news, Malcolm Brogdon left the game after just playing 16 minutes after getting clocked in the chin by Miles Turner. Had a few stitches put in, but none of that matters. The Pacers cruised on their way to a 112-87 win against the Phoenix Suns. Welcome in to Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful show. And as always, on these post-game shows, I bring you the good, the bad, and the ugly when the Pacers win against the Phoenix Suns. And afterwards, I'll bring you a segment on T.J. Warren and how he is one of the most unique players and how that has led the Pacers front office being right over and over again. Today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by Indeed. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions. Will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Well, Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help curate your short list of applicants fast. Also, add a skills test to your job post so you can be confident in your applicant's abilities. The library of more than 50 skills tests range from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tool to make hiring decisions quickly and be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job at Indeed.com/LockedOn and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/LockedOn. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer valid only through March 31st, 2020. So the Pacers thoroughly dominated the Suns on Wednesday night. I mean, this game was never in doubt. Maybe it was like 6 points in that then in the first and halftime, but it really felt like it was kind of the Pacers game to lose from the start. They ran away in the third quarter going up by 18, and then in the fourth they just kept extending their lead to push it to a 25-point victory. The good, and this is where I'm going to start, I'm not going to do a ton about it because I'm going to talk about T.J. Warren later, but he had a fantastic game to lead the way for the Pacers. Definitely got that revenge. Played late into the game, too. Had 25 points. You know, did his usual T.J. Warren self. Shot a little up, better from three than his average, but was his usual T.J. Warren self, just scoring buckets time after time. The next good, and I think this is kind of, it goes with a good and a bad, so like, was the way McConnell stepped up tonight. He had a double-double with 10 points and 11 assists. So Malcolm Brogdon went out mid-second quarter, late second quarter, right before the second quarter, after he accidentally got an inadvertent elbow from Miles Turner, and I believe he had stitches on the chin. He did not return. There's not been any update on whether he's going to play this weekend or whatnot. It was not hopefully a super serious injury. Like, you know, hopefully it's just kind of a stitch-up heel, get back to playing basketball. It might even be by the end of the weekend. But McConnell stepped in for Brogdon to play 27 minutes. Usually McConnell averages about 20-something per game. I believe it's like 22 per game. So he really stepped in to play more minutes, and he was fantastic with 11, like I said, with 11 assists, and really stepped up to the challenge. And that's where McConnell, I think, has so much value to this Pacer team, is he can just come in and do that. I mean, he, you know, the net rating for McConnell shows that he's kind of a middling to average player, right? I don't think he's having a terrible year. I think, you know, I don't think he's a bad player, but like, he's not like this super plus player. But when you watch him play, there's just something when you watch him that you feel like he just adds to this team, whether it's the chemistry of the other guys, the energy he brings. Like, there's just something he brings that not all of the other guys bring. And maybe at the end of the day, he still isn't as good as a guy like Aaron Holiday, who can just drain threes and get hot. He just run team off the court when he's on fire. But McConnell brings a little extra something with his, just like the way he pushes himself to, you know, the speed he plays at, the passes he makes, and the steals he makes. But, you know, he has some of that, you know, kind of things that I guess are always tied to white players, which isn't really fair, because we have a couple guys like him, right? I think Justin Holiday is kind of has the same kind of intangibles McConnell's, where you just, like, you know, when you get the raw stats, you know, Justin Holiday is like middling to average, but he just, there's something about him, the versatility, the energy, the ability to drain, you know, the step, you know, one dribble, you know, no dribble threes, like all the thing. And Justin Holiday had another good night, right? He was another Pacer I think was in the good. He had 11 points on 4 of 6 shooting and 3 of 4 from 3. You know, he played about 25 minutes. He kind of filled in for some of Brogdon's minutes when they sort of kind of reached them around and whatnot. Well, and because Jeremy Lamb had 3 fouls early in the first half. So, you know, both those guys I thought for the bench, because stepped up the bench, I think dominated again. I mean, we're talking about, let's see, let me do the math real quick. 45 points off the bench. Obviously, 5 of that came late from Sumner and Jakar Sampson. But 45 points off the bench, there was just a dominating night for the Pacers once again to the, I believe, the Phoenix bench, which didn't have a terrible night, right? So I think it put up 33, but losing by 12 there, and the starters just didn't have it for the Suns either. So I guess we'll switch to a bad real fast. This might be a good, depending on who you are, especially shout out to Gary, but TJ Leaf did not play even in garbage time, and it seems like his days as a Pacer are numbered. However, I will say he is under contract next year, and there's no reason to actually just cut him, right? You're going to pay him anyways, and you're over the tax, so they're like, unless you need the spot, there's no value in that. But I could see, I guess, maybe some team will offer like some cash for him or something of value for the Pacers. Or he'll probably be the thrower if they make a trade or whatnot, because he has a useful $4 million salary next season. Bad, but not Pacer-related, the Suns. I mean, their leading scorers were Kelly Oubre and Devin Booker combined for 33 points on 10 of 38 shooting. I don't know. I mean, I know the Suns team isn't great. They were really good to start the year. Then Aaron Baines got hurt, and things got all screwed up and whatnot. But, man, this team just, it still isn't there. They just still aren't there. I mean, they've got better players, certainly. I think Rubio is obviously the best guard they've had since Steve Nash, maybe, which is saying something. But the way they played the past 12 years without Nash. But they just don't have it. I don't know how to put it, man. For them tonight, I mean, they might make the playoffs simply because the 8 spot in the West is a disaster, right? So if you take the 8 seed in the West real fast, I believe the 8 seed is Memphis at 20-24. San Antonio is 19-23. Portland, 19-26. Suns, 18-26. New Orleans, 17-27. I mean, that 8 seed is going to be miserable. I mean, that 8 seed will be worse than the 8 seed probably in the East, although Brooklyn is 18-24. So about the same, actually. I may have misspoken on that one. Back to the game. So some other good, Sabonis, man. The guy is always putting up all-star level performances night after night. I know he didn't have a great night against the Jazz, but man, 8 of 11 on 24, 13, 4 assists. I mean, he is, if he doesn't make the all-star game, I'm pretty sure Pacer fans are going to riot. Just some quick dates real fast. So the all-star starters are selected on the 23rd, which I don't imagine it's supposed to be one of those. I believe he didn't even rank. You know, when you do front court, he ranks 9th right now. So he got to get up to, like, the top, right, 2, I believe, is to be considered for that, or 2 or 3, right? But so the reserves are then revealed the following week. So that will be revealed January 30th. And the captains pick the teams to 6. So we'll know in the next week whether it makes the team or not. But, you know, he just keeps putting up number after number for number. And I think when you think about Sabonis, right, when he was signed this offseason, it was like, how much money do you give him, right? And I think it was like Turner's kind of gets the basis. He's probably going to be that good, right? I thought, you know, at his peak, he was a, 15-point, 12-rebound guy, right? So, like, last year's stats, it was 14 points and 9 rebounds. I thought he could get that rebound number up, but his shooting probably won't go up that much, right? Well, I was wrong. I mean, he can be kind of the centerpiece. I would even call him the centerpiece of the offense in the sense that he, the most important play the Pacers run always runs through him, right? Screen and roll, screen and pop is almost, I mean, screen pop is kind of Turner, but screen and something is always through Sabonis. So he, you know, he's proven me wrong. He can really be the center point of an offense in a way that I really couldn't have imagined going in the year, and it's awesome to see because it, like I said, elevates this team's whole ceiling. Going to some bad, I guess, if we have to. Like I said, when you win a game by 25 points, it's hard to have like a bad, right? The Pacers only won the rebounding battle by 3. I mean, I'm just reading. I mean, that's like trying to. They lost offensive rebounding battle by 5, which is, you know, an issue they continue to have over and over again. Now, granted, Brogdon didn't play. I think Brogdon coming back was a key part of helping prevent those offensive rebounds. They shot kind of average in the line at 58%. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think it's hard to kind of find. A ton of bad from this game. And if you wanted to pick one right, Jeremy Lamb just kind of continued to struggle. Three fouls, only two knife shooting. Turner just kind of had a bad game of 104 for 9 points, but not bad. You know, continued to do some great things on the defensive end. I thought, you know, this was like an expected Pacer win, so there's nothing to happen. I was like, oh, that's surprising and whatnot. And I think it pushed the Pacers' road record to now above 500, which is also kind of nice considering the weird home roads, which for most of the teams, I think the Pacers are, what, 17-5 at home and 12-11 on the road, which is kind of ridiculous. It also pushed the Pacers back into, I think, a top five seed. Yep, they're now the five seed, sitting 2.5 back of Miami and a game and a half back of Toronto, which they can easily make up when they play Toronto in about a couple weeks. But, yeah, overall from this performance, like, nothing surprising, but, you know, it's good. It puts Pacers back on track. I think the goal is probably to win three of these West Coast games. They should beat the Warriors on Friday, who the Warriors are a miserable team right now without their best players. And if they go 4-1 even, that's going to be even better because that will put them at, if they go 4-1 on this trip, they'll be 31-16, probably a top, I would say they'll be close to the four seed, possibly even. With Oladipo returning, and, you know, the ceiling is who knows what after that point. I mean, it could go pretty much anywhere. All right, let's take one quick break, and then I want to do a whole segment on TJ Warren, the front office is kind of genius, and how unique of a player actually TJ Warren is. Welcome back into Locked On Pacers podcast. So like I said before the break, is I want to do a segment on TJ Warren and kind of his unique season so far. I think it's obvious if you watch TJ Warren, he is certainly an odd player in terms of today's NBA, right? So for a guy who is playing on the perimeter a lot, at kind of the 3-4, maybe even at 2 at times, he takes a limited amount of threes, thing right to put it, and takes a ton of these what has been deemed before as inefficient shots, right? A bunch of these inside the lane, 10, 12 footers, floaters, putbacks, things that create points, but necessarily aren't the efficient way to create points, as you would say in the NBA world, right? The efficient way to create points is shoot a bunch of threes, shoot 38%, and that kind of creates a more efficient game, taking a bunch of like 12 footers that maybe you make at like 50-something percent, right? So like, just real fast, the logic goes, right? It's kind of expected point per shot, right? So if you shoot 33% on a three, the idea is you have to shoot at least 50% on that two, right? To get the same expected points of 1 point, right? So if you shoot 40% on three, you have to shoot 60% from two to get the same expected point value of 1.2, right? So the idea is that most guys are not able to shoot 50% from inside these 12, 13, 14 feet ranges. And so they shoot, let's say, mid-40s. So actually, it's better for them to just step out and take a three. Well, Warren is the exact opposite of that, right? So you look at TJ Warren. He's averaging right now 18 points, around 17.8 points per game on this is 3-point shooting percentage at 37.5 and 2-point field goal percentage at 54.9, right? So that's just something that's like outside the realm, right? So when you look at his actual like by distance, for example, he's shooting 74.5% from 0 to 3 feet, which is a ridiculous rate. He's shooting actually 50% from 10 to 16, which means actually that's as efficient as any guy who takes a it shoots 33% from three and shoots 43% from 3 to 10 feet. So these numbers skew because he has such a high around the rim rate that it kind of helps boost his whole average up. But what I wanted to do really is kind of compare TJ Warren to other players, right? Because I think the season he's having is very old school in a way, right? It's very like Reggie Miller-esque, I wanted to say, almost in a way, where like instead of just being this, you know, like a lot of guys, he could just take six threes a game and he probably would shoot 37, 36, 35% on them, and that would probably be a little more efficient. But what he does is he also shoots so many different shots that he creates, I think, indirectly. He makes defenses hard from the guard, right? So instead of, you know, worrying about, you know, because Warren shoots so well, let's say, on that kind of 10 to 16 footer, right? Well enough that it's almost as efficient as being like a very mediocre three-point shooter, right? So it forces defenses to have to kind of guard him when he's moving because you know he could pull up any moment and make a shot, right? If not, you leave him wide open, he's probably going to make it at a higher rate. So that's part of it, right? So what I did was I typed in Warren's numbers into Basketball Reference and kind of pulled up similar seasons, right? So when you type in basically form, it's 54% from two and 35% from three or higher, and then 10 attempts from two per game and three attempts from three per game, you get a list of 25 players. Only 25, and most of them are names of, like, great players, right? So you get LeBron 4 times, right? So of the 25. Then you get Durant 7 times. That's 11. Now it's 11 of the times it's happened, right? You get Larry Bird twice, and then you put in so a couple other ones, like Karl Anthony Towns. You get 3 times, and then I believe you put in Harden, you get him. So then you get, like, a bunch of ones from Harden has it one time. Kyrie's done it one time. Bradley Beal's done it one time. Devin Booker's done it one time. Kawhi's done it one time. Goran Dragic has done it one time. And the good old Reggie Miller has done it one time. And then you have this weird one, Jakarr Sampson. But remember, that's like six games in Chicago, and I don't really count that. And there was, I didn't factor in games yet because Warren's only played about 40. So yeah, he's on this weird kind of, I mean, it's sort of a, I don't know if I call it a club, but on this weird club where guys who shoot these really high percentages from 2 and 3 on these really high two-point attempts and ends up in this list of players who are all Hall of Famers. I guess Goran Dragic is the only one kind of I'll see out later. Bradley Beal, maybe a future Hall of Famer. At least this list is elite offensive players, right? So, like, Booker is an elite offensive player right now. Bradley Beal is, and so on, right? And actually, really, the Booker you're getting is the Booker this season. So, really, this season, right, if you just pull guys doing that this season right now, only two. Or three, sorry. James Harden, Booker, and Warren. Those are the only three guys actually shooting above 54% on two, above 35% on three, on 10 or 3-plus attempts per game. Harden, obviously, is at 10 and 13, which is, like, ridiculous. But I think what this kind of whole thing shows is just how unique of an offensive player Warren is. Now, I'm not saying this necessarily like he this translates to him being, you know, the best offensive player or whatnot, but it does show how he's such a unique player. But the fact that he can put up these kind of numbers and at least these kind of shooting splits puts him on a level with other guys in a way that I think undervalues offensive game, right? So I think for a while the rap on Warren has always been, well, he's an up and down player. You know, originally until last season, he doesn't take a ton of threes. So what is his value stretching the floor? You know, he's a lot of like these 2-point shots and they're kind of junk, right? So like this year, he's at his highest 2-point percentage by basically a whole 20%, give or take, or 2%, sorry. And on 3-point percentage, he's basically, besides his last year, he's way higher than any other year in his career on the amount of attempts he's taking, right? He's morphed into this, I mean, I want to say almost better player with the Pacers in a way I think, I don't know if you could have imagined or whatnot, but it's sort of shows the values of the Pacers kind of system, right? So, like, I think coming into the year, we all had expectations that Warren was just like a good offensive player, was going to put up numbers, but at the efficiency he's doing it, the fact that he's played all 45 games, has started all 45 games, has playing 32 minutes per game, basically played the most total minutes of any Pacer player so far this year, I think maybe outside Sabonis, like, it's sort of, to me, it's like dumbfounding how he got away from the Suns, right? And maybe he needed to get away from Phoenix to be able to succeed like he is. And I think on like tonight, you're reminded that really what they did was just stupid, right? You look at the Suns, Pacers crushed them tonight by 20 plus points. Like, you just look at them and you realize, what did they do? But to me, I guess it, Warren is sort of elevated, right? So I think for the Pacers the past couple years, the biggest problem for them has been, could they find like a small forward that was good enough, and I'm not saying he's going to have a defense, but it was good enough to compete with the best small forwards in the league, right? Every team that's good in this league basically has a forward that's their best player, right? And I'm counting Giannis as a forward, right? So Giannis is a forward. I would count Simmons as a kind of forward guard player, right? And it's really kind of this like modern day forward, right? A guy who can bring up the ball and, you know, pick passes, but no, the forward, right? The Lakers and the Clippers both have dominant forwards. I guess the one I wouldn't say right now, the Denver doesn't really. Houston probably really doesn't, but the Warriors do, and Draymond and Clay, even though Clay's sort of a guard, but like those kind of players, right? Those kind of like big body guys, and to be like elite and to be one of those top teams, you need some of these kind of forward-esque point forward type players, right? So the real way to get one of those, right? A lot of those guys, Butler's another one, sorry. And I would say Gordon Hayward's another one. So oftentimes, the only way to get one of those guys is in free agency, right? I mean, all the players I named have switched teams in the last few years, except for some of the ones that are on the rookie deal still or on rookie extensions, have all switched teams, gone to a new team, whatever, they don't want to play in place in Indiana, right? So you got to kind of go out there and find a diamond in the rough, right? You got to find a guy who maybe isn't on that level, but because you're excelling with every other position, you can get away with playing this guy because he can do enough offensively to compete with those guys, you know, be efficient enough, all that stuff. And Warren is that, right? He's the small forward the Pacers have kind of needed, right? When you look at the Pacers roster, and like I said, for the past couple years, it's always been, well, who's going to play? Like, they need that kind of forward guy, right? If Thaddeus Young kind of playing the four, maybe a little three, whatever, you know, guarding threes, right? Or it was Bojan playing there. Just guys that didn't quite fit the forward prototype. And I think Warren does, and he leads to success in this Pacers team and elevates their ceiling, right? I mean, if Warren is your fourth best offensive player doing this, when everybody comes back, and I'm counting, you know, Brogdon, Sabonis, Oladipo, and then Warren, I mean, the ceiling kind of keeps going up and up and hits a point where I'm not sure it isn't as good as a number, you know, as a Miami, as a Boston, as a Philly, right? You know, the Patriots have beat two of those three teams I mentioned without Oladipo. And I think, you know, with Oladipo back, it just puts their ceiling at a level. And I think what's crazy, like I said, going back to the whole thing, is that the Pacers got Warren for free, basically. Now, maybe it made sense to get rid of him, but the Pacers basically were able to elevate their ceiling, by picking up Warren as basically somebody who any team could have gotten that cap space, right? And that's what it kind of shows, like, the almost ingenious of the front office, where they looked at the landscape and they saw Thad and they saw Bojan and they saw, you know, they're good players, and keeping those players or whatever are going to keep us at a certain level, but it wasn't going to accomplish the goal of how do we become a top, you know, two or three team in the East, right? And looked around and they were able to adeptly realize that taking on Warren opened up Rubio and understand kind of the dynamics, and realized that meant they had a shot at a guy like Brogdon, who getting Warren opened up the space to get rid of, right, Bojan, whatever, and all the dominoes that led from that, right? Because Rubio went elsewhere, but the money for Bojan to go to Utah, and all the dominoes kind of fell, right? And we might look back at this whole offseason, right, the Patriots made this year, and look at it like it was one of the shrewdest offseasons in franchise history, right? I mean, to basically flip around your roster, and I mean, you're not even adding Sabonis extension in there, right? Basically, to overturn your roster in a way that actually make, you know, it's rare that you turn around, like you flip around your whole roster and get better, but to be able to make enough moves to get basically two guys who can play in your starting five and are actually better than the two guys they probably replaced, or at least will be in the future, right? So I'm not sure Warren is just better than Thad at the moment, but has a better shot of being better than the next 2-3 years, so on. And then on top of that, you sign a guy who's soon to be an all-star on an extension that pays him way below the market value. I mean, it's just like, and then to make this all happen to you, had to originally give Turner the extension because, you know, he would have made more money in this office and all these other things. Like, I don't know if it's kind of turning into like a overly praise of the front office, but I thought two summers ago Pritchard knew what he was doing when he was able to go after and get Bojan and Collison and Corey Joseph. And he just, like, he knew that the team that he had in 2016, going 2017, wasn't going to be that good and needed some veteran guys to kind of help push them along, right? They were shooting for, let's say, the 6-8 seed, and they got the 5 seed, right? Well, then he smartly realized all of a sudden, oh, wait, 2 years later, I have a team that now a ceiling has changed because the two guys I traded for in Sabonis and Oladipo are all-stars, let's put it that way, and that my ceiling for this team has now changed where I should be able to compete for the East crown or at least be behind Milwaukee, who is fantastic. They probably won't beat them, but be, you know, a top two or three team in the East. Well, Bojan and Thad and Darren don't really accomplish that goal, right? You bring those three guys in to kind of steady the ship and keep your team solid, but, you know, bringing a guy like Brogdon and Warren and Lamb take you to that next level because, you're basically able to turn those two guys into three guys at depth, and they get a much better player, in my opinion, in Brogdon than any of those guys, and then Warren on top of that is able to basically make up for all of Bojan's production last year, plus some, and really be actually a more effective offensive player because he can do a couple more things than Bojan, so he's not, he scares defenses a little more, right? I think Bojan's a really good offensive player and hit a ton of threes and kind of thing, but he didn't quite have the three-point shot and the drive game, and I think that's where Warren excels more, where he can just move around in space really well and just get, you know, cut to the rim or be you know, under the rim for a nice little, like, quick pass, you know, turn around floater, and just the way Bojan was in, right? He just like moves well inside 5 feet in a way not very many players do, to be honest. Warren embraces contact and all the other things. So I know this segment kind of went away from Warren to more praise the front office, but I think we're going to look back and we're going to see this. And I think right now you'll see that Warren, while he's probably never going to be the Pacers like top two or three player once everybody returns, he's going to be a critical piece of his team making a kind of a playoff push. And I think the way he's playing and the stats he have are really important. And they really show that he is a unique talent and will hopefully push this Pacer team further in the playoffs. I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on TJ Warren. I know he's getting a lot of praise, but if you have some negative thoughts, I don't know. Tweet at Lockdown Pacers about that if you feel like you want something on TJ Warren, or at me at FreeMadam5. As always, you can follow my co-host Tony's at TeasedNBA. It is Thursday, and we are actually on the anniversary of Oladipo's injury, just so everybody knows. But we are less than a week away from Oladipo returning, 6 days to be exact, which is on a Thursday. Tony will bring you tomorrow's podcast previewing the weekend's games against the Warriors Trailblazers. Then we'll both be back on Monday, and you'll probably get a special show of both of us together midweek when Oladipo returns. But get excited, we're 6 days away. It's all for the Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.